The Homeland Security Department's Procurement Innovation Lab, or PIL, is tackling one of those hidden problems of federal acquisition, the need to close out low-risk, low-dollar contracts without so much fuss. Too often these contracts end up at the bottom of a stack, and the backlog builds up. Soraya Correa is the Chief Procurement Officer at DHS. She tells Executive Editor Jason Miller about how the PIL took on the contract closeout process and re-engineered it.
We looked at our contract closeout process, and this is what you're calling the backlog. This is what this Federal Register notice was about, was our new quick closeout procedures that we worked out with our chief financial officer and our procurement community to come up with a way to take care of these low-risk contract actions that we can close out relatively quickly in an easy, simplified manner. When I talk about quick closeouts, when I tell you low risk, I'm talking about contracts that are typically small dollar value, generally firm fixed price, no activity over the last 12 to 24 months. Final goods and services have been delivered. So we know they're probably ready for closeout. And what we're doing is in a streamlined approach, trying to close them in one fell swoop. So we identified, roughly speaking, about 350,000 of these types of contracts across the department. And the process that we're following is we publish a Federal Register notice so that we alert folks that we're doing this. That way, if there is a contract that perhaps shouldn't be closed out using these closeout procedures, a vendor can come back and talk to us. But of the 350,000, probably about 92% of those are actually what we call overage. So they're more than a year old. They've been in the process, if you will. And I want to explain something about what we're calling a backlog. Generally speaking, we prioritize closeouts. It's one of the reasons that we've had success with our audits, because we actually will prioritize closeouts to focus on those high dollar, more complex, higher risk contracts that should be closed out as quickly as possible. So what happens is these types of low risk contracts will fall into the backlog because we are dedicating our resources into those more important actions that impact the agency's financial resources, our audits, and other processes that are much more critical to the agency.
What's the difference with a contract closeout? You have a certain set of parameters. Does the contract meet these parameters? If so, what happens? Give me a sense, because you talk about the streamlining the business processes. So
what happens is, once a contract is completed, we make sure that the final invoice has been received and has been paid. We identify if there's any leftover funds on the contract or any action that needs to be undertaken. We confirm with the parties involved, the program office, the contractor, and the contracting officer, that there is no further action, and then we do a modification to close out the file and retire that contract file. But these steps can be a little bit tedious because sometimes you have to go out and do some research. You have to do research in the financial systems. You may have to go research with the program office, and sometimes even the vendors have to research. When we talk about these low-risk actions, because we know generally there's not money on them, or if there is, it's very small dollar amounts, we push those aside and focus on the really big actions, the ones where perhaps we decided not to exercise an option or we decided not to continue buying a particular product or service and we funded it, and we want to recover that money to return it back into the coffers.
What do you have to go through to get it done? Because I can imagine that DHS is not alone to have this type of backlog. What do you have to go through to get there?
First of all, we had to sit down and think of what's the right process and what's the right mix of contracts to do this, identify what were the low-risk contracts. So what we did was we pulled together a working group that consisted of our financial office. We had representatives from our financial offices. We had contracting officer representatives. Of course, I had people from my procurement innovation lab, my policy staff to make sure that we were not violating any rules or regulations, to make sure we followed the proper procedures. And then last but not least, we actually conferred with some contractors out there. We actually reached out to a few of the companies that we do business with to say, hey, how would you view a process like this? The other thing that we did, once we came up with a procedure that the CFO, and I did mention, I hope that the CFO was part of that team. Once we conferred with the CFO and we as a team reached agreement with our counsel, with CFO, et cetera, then we went out and briefed the GAO, the IG, to make sure that they wouldn't have an issue with this process. In other words, that they agreed that this looked like a viable process, the steps that we were following, the approach that we were taking, and how we were going to mitigate any risk of having a contract on the list that perhaps a contractor might have an issue with, which is, as I mentioned, the mitigation strategy. As they call us, we pull it off the list and we work that through the normal route. So it's about coordinating. It's about good communications. It's about making sure that all the people that could be involved and or looking at this process understand what we're doing and that we have agreement that we've covered all the appropriate steps.
Let's broaden this discussion. Obviously, the Procurement Innovation Lab played a huge role in this. Give me an update. How are things moving along? What are some of the latest initiatives or latest successes with the Procurement Innovation Lab?
We have 9 projects that we've completed, and we have 9 projects at various stages. It is about experimenting. It's about looking at business processes or looking at how we evaluate proposals or looking at an entire solicitation. So one of the projects that we have underway that I can't tell you a whole heck of a lot about, but it is one that we're really excited about, is FLASH, our Flexible Agile Support for the Homeland, which is basically an agency-wide procurement for agile software development services that we teamed with our CIO community to put it out. And everything that we've done on FLASH is very different from what we've done in the past. Start with our industry day, where our communications were more of a discussion, where we provided the ability to do speed teaming, if you will, or speed dating, as some folks like to say it, but also an opportunity for vendors to meet with government officials and ask questions. We also had experts in various business areas like small business, digital services, etc., so industry could come up to speed on what we were doing in those areas. So it was a very interactive day that focused a little bit more on the business processes around bidding as opposed to focusing on the requirement that would be contained in the solicitation. Then from there, our evaluation. You know, our technical factor was a technical challenge where the vendor came in and did an exercise. They had to come in and basically take us through an agile software development process. And then when they were done with that, I think they had like 4 to 6 hours to complete that. And then once they were done with that, they came in and did a presentation. And they were able to bring their technical team and demonstrate for us how they would accomplish the work. And we had a team of observers and evaluators that saw what they were doing and evaluated on that. Staffing proposal, I think, was less than 10 pages. And, of course, a very simple and straightforward evaluation. The other thing that we did unusual here is we publicized how many proposals we received, which was 114. And we also told industry that we intended to award around the end of October, and we're pretty close to doing that. So we're really excited about this procurement because it really is a completely different approach. But we've also done a couple of other procurements where it was group debriefing. Briefings, for example, was a process that we tried out. We've done some where it's based on oral discussions or use of qualified bidders lists. We've done several that are on the technical demonstration front where we, for example, on a test and evaluation procurement, we gave them code with errors in it and then asked them a set of questions, and they came in and answered the questions verbally in front of us with their team of experts. So we're trying to do a lot of different things in the PIL. And obviously, you just got an example of what we've done with a business process. But the other thing that we're doing with the PIL is educational. And that is that we go out and host webinars on a biweekly basis. My team, led by Eric Cho, hosts webinars. And we invite the folks who have done the experiments on the PIL to educate our acquisition community on the process, what the lessons learned were, what they would do differently perhaps, and how to work through some of these processes. Because the most important part of the PIL is proliferating the learning, getting that message out there, you can do this too. And one of the things that we've been really successful is the webinars. I think the first webinar had about 40 people. These days we measure upwards of 200 people. And the webinars are typically an hour and a half to 2 hours. We don't try to make them too long because we want to make sure that it's the right length to capture everybody's attention. It is our entire acquisition community that we invite. So it's the contracting folks, the program managers, the CIOs, you know, whoever wants to participate. And we have a little 5-minute segment at the beginning that's called The Tone from the Top. And we invite senior leaders to give their opinion of that particular process or what we're doing on the PIL. So we've had huge successes. The next thing that we've implemented is what we call our DigiBadges program. So we are certifying our folks who participate in the PIL as innovators, because we also have educational sessions where we talk about the TechFAR handbook, we talk about the digital services playbook, and other materials that are out there to help people understand different ways of doing things. So the DigiBadges is our next program where we're actually going to certify our innovators.
All right, so there's a lot there. Of course, you're right. I know you're limited on Flash, but correct me if I'm wrong. My understanding from some people in industry, this came out as a small business only or small business set aside. Talk a little about, if you can, the thinking of why that versus something where you see sometimes where there's a small business track or an unrestricted track.
When we announced Flash, we said we were experimenting. We were really going to try to do something different. And we did our market survey. We talked to industry, and we saw that the viability was there for small business set aside. So that was the basis of our decision. It was the market, the marketplace, and the availability. And as you can see, we got 114 proposals. So clearly there is a market out there in the small business community. And Flash is the first of possibly many coming down the pike, or other procurements that could be coming down. Let me not say many. Other procurements that could be coming down the pike. So
I wrote about this maybe 3 or 4 months ago, that there's this proliferation of Agile, just like we've talked about the proliferation of GWACs and multiple word contracts in the past. Give me a sense, is this something, Flash is DHS-wide, so is this something you're talking to other parts of DHS that you're trying to kind of move everyone toward using, if not a single contract, at least strongly encourage them to use the single contract?
The goal with Flash was, number one, to put together a vehicle that people could come and buy Agile services. Yes, they could use Eagle, and in some cases, components came to me and said, hey, I need to continue moving forward because they had programs and schedules to meet, and we said, certainly, you can do that. But we also wanted to have a vehicle that was specific to Agile services and the different methodologies that can be used to provide Agile services. I don't like to say mandatory because it's not a word that I like to use as a former head of contracting. I like to give our contracting officers and our program offices the flexibilities of deciding what's the right tool for them. But I think this is an important tool in the toolbox because it was built with the CIOs in mind. We actually coordinated from a CIO perspective with the entire community. We came together as a team to identify our requirements for Flash and to put together this solicitation. So TSA, CBP, ICE, everybody is very familiar with it. We're all working together on it, and we certainly know we have early adopters. But the one thing I never do is tell a program to wait for something. If they really need to move forward, that's why we have the Eagles and Alliant and other vehicles like that available to them. They're tools in the toolkit.
Soraya Correa is the Chief Procurement Officer at Homeland Security, speaking with Federal News Radio's Executive Editor Jason Miller. Learn more about the Procurement Innovation Lab at federalnewsradio.com.